Hi guys, and welcome back to the MIP, the Male Infertility Podcast. I'm your host, Nick, and welcome to the episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening again, and I hope you enjoyed the last one, the interview with Pursuing Fatherhood. That was a fantastic, fantastic interview. And talking of interviews, I've got another one for you guys today. It's with Tom and Hannah. They're up in Scotland, and we're going to discuss their journey. As always, it's not always straightforward. So without further ado, let's start the interview.
So, Tom and Hannah, thank you for joining me on the MIP for this episode. And right, let's crack on. So just tell me a bit about yourself, where you are, and the situation and journey that you've been on so far.
Okay, cool. So we live up in Scotland now, but this journey did start when we were living down in the south of England originally. So this is what I said a minute ago, it might be a little bit convoluted, but it all started when I was about early teens. I noticed I wasn't really sort of like developing height-wise properly. So I went to the doctors and they basically laughed me out of the surgery and told me there's no cure for being the height I am.
Okay.
We skip on about 10 years. I realised I was developing man boobs, basically, it's a gynecomastia. And again, the doctors didn't really take it too seriously. Ended up referring me to the breast clinic, where I felt like I had tools. I sat there with a bunch of basically women, and I'm sat on my own, like, what am I doing in here? That didn't really pull up anything. They said, take some evening primrose oil. That's all they said to me. So skip on a few years later, we move up to Scotland, and then we met the new doctor, and she's been really good. And I feel like she's the first person who's actually taken this seriously. And she referred me to an endocrinologist who said, I've got low testosterone, and he needs to give me testosterone therapy, otherwise I'm going to have some problems later in life. Mm-hmm. But part of that process, he says that once you're on testosterone, it will stop you from creating your own sperm, I suppose, you know. So you need to go and freeze something if you want to have kids. Because me and Hannah had just got married. We want to have kids. So went to the doctors and did the deed. And it came back. I got a phone call from the doctor and she said, you've got... zero sperm count. And I was like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was news totally out of the blue for us. I suppose what makes it a little bit different for us as well, because we weren't like trying for a kid at this stage, I suppose. You know, that was going to happen maybe a year down the line. Mm-hmm. So to hear that even without having any inkling was a bit of a blow, but a massive blow to both of us, wasn't it?
So you know how you said how in the beginning it was harming your growth and so on. Is that how are we talking there? Like literally just height wise or?
Yes, I'm not actually that small, but in relation to my family, I'm the smallest out of my direct and extended families. You know, I'm 5'5", so I'm not like a midget. But the reason for this, it all came, so the doctor, when I found out that I had no zero sperm count, azoospermia, had some genetic testing done, and it has appeared that I have got a micro deletion in my Y chromosomes.
Oh, okay. So that's probably why then.
Yes, it explains the short height.
So how many, when you went for the test, did you just go for the one test or did you go for multiple tests and was there blood work done?
So good point. So the first test was through the GP for the NHS, and that's when she said you've got no zero sperm. But then when we realised the waiting list on the NHS was going to be something ridiculous, like 8 months or something. So we did pay to go private to a local clinic. And then, but because we were new patients, so then they wanted to do it again. So I had to do it again. And it was the same result. I can't remember what other, do you have any blood's done?
Yeah, you had, I think that you had, well, you previously had to have done by the endocrinologist, you had all your bloods done. So they checked LH and FSH as well. And that's what the consultant that we saw said, that your levels wouldn't react to having like hormone replacement therapy to kickstart that.
So, sorry, if this is all over the place, I can start again if it helps you.
No, it's completely fine. It's completely fine.
Okay, because it's for me also, as you know yourself, it's a lot has happened in the last year, and it's trying to piece it all together.
I understand completely. Yeah. Completely, yeah.
If you want me to, like I say, stop and start again, that's cool. So yeah, they did do blood, sorry, and I think my FSH is high.
Mm.
And my LH was normal, and because of that, they said that's when they I suppose they diagnosed it as non-obstructive.
And
but at that point, so what I found also on that note is that the NHS, every doctor we've been speaking to has been very negative. They always give you the worst case scenario, I feel.
So they weren't taking you seriously, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I feel a little bit like that from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they saw my FSH levels were high, it's kind of like, okay, you've not got much chance now of having conceiving.
Yeah. And did they, was this at the fertility clinic where you are up in Scotland, or was this in the hospital? Did they have a separate department or?
So we did actually, we went to a fertility clinic, which is totally private. It's not attached to a hospital. But then we did get the referral to the NHS, and we did go to that appointment as well. We just thought, why not?
I suppose you've got to go for whatever avenue you can, really. So that's okay. I get you. And obviously, after going through that and so on, when you hear that you've got zero sperm, it's a massive knock, isn't it? It's like, are you serious, sort of thing?
Yeah.
That's the wife. So what were your initial reactions when you did ultimately find out that you had zero sperm?
My initial reaction was, I didn't really believe it, in a sense, because I thought, well, why? I've got nothing wrong with me. Why should I have zero sperm?
Yeah.
And then I suppose I started to feel angry that it had not been picked up in the past, because I had been to the doctors since I was a teenager about certain things, like some of my height.
Yeah.
And also, there's, I don't know, I suppose like an insignificance, like why should I even, what's the point in being here if I can't even have a kid,
Yeah, it's kind of like that's what we're here for, isn't it, sort of thing. And
yeah.
And now you get the news and it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But Hannah, what did you think when Tom got the results as well? How did you feel?
I think I certainly felt shocked. I think that we just grew up in a society where that we are just programmed from when we're born, that we have children and that's just a very natural thing that's going to happen. There's no discussion really ever out there. And I think as well, we've really said, it's so women centric as well. And that's what we found, is our doctor is brilliant and she told us that news, but it was nothing like, his leaflet, that's what we joke about and say, and I think that's what I kind of felt. I think after that is this just frustration of just wanting an answer and somebody wanting to, to listen to us and to kind of actually want to make this work for us. And I've just felt the door's kind of just been shut for us at every stage. It's just kind of been like, this is not going to happen for you. Donor sperm, adoption, off you go, see you later. We kind of don't want you here, really, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And did they, obviously, when you had all the test results and back and so on, what options did they give? Did they give you then? Was it literally anything?
So the options were given to us were, so before we did the genetic test, they said, it's looking like you're going to have to go down the route of donor sperm or adoption. because of the test results I've already had. They said there's a tiny slim chance that if the genetic tests come back with no problems, that you might be a candidate for, sperm aspiration.
Okay. Is that the micro-T's?
Yeah, did you have that, I think, didn't you?
I had that, yeah. And yeah. Obviously, there is a low percentage.
Yeah. So but that was on the conditions. Was on the NHS, they said that you've got to have no genetic... Your genes have got to be good to be a candidate for it. Okay. So I had the genetic test results. They came back. But the urologist, his words were, "I'm not a geneticist, so I can't discuss these results with you." But it's crazy. The whole thing's been crazy. But your options now are going to be donor sperm or adoption.
So he couldn't go into any real detail then. He kind of left you a little bit hanging.
Yeah. So, but because me and Hannah are quite, we don't take no for an answer. I asked him for a copy of the results. And he did give me a copy. And honestly, when I first got them, it's like reading a foreign language, because they're all that genetics, and it's like I've got GCSE biology coming back into my mind. We did get a private appointment with a geneticist to get him to discuss the results with us.
And I'm guessing he basically gave you the straight answer of you can't go down that route then, I guess.
Well, this is the interesting twist at the end of the story, is that I can go into more detail if you need, but with the damage to my Y chromosome I've got, luckily it's actually not in a bad place.
Okay.
And the geneticist we spoke to, he's been doing genetics for 30 years. And he said that I'm the first person he's seen with this genetic disorder.
Right.
But he did say, from his experience, there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to go through micro-T surgery.
Okay. Well, you are truly unique then.
Yes. But he did say it with like a massive disclaimer saying, this would be an experiment, you know, don't get your hopes up.
Okay. So with that second opinion on the results, did you go for the micro-T's?
So we've not got to that stage yet, because he was a geneticist.
Okay.
And it's not him who does it. So what he's done is he's written like a letter of recommendation to our urologist consultant, to say, from a genetics point of view, I think you should go for it. And that's where we are now. We've not actually met the urologist yet.
Okay. And would that be potentially going through the NHS, or would that potentially go in private?
We don't know. Well, we're hoping NHS because of the money.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, because this person we're seeing is NHS, but he's also private. But we're lucky enough that my parents are retired and they want grandkids. And they did say, you know, if you need to go private, they can help us out. So,
oh, that's excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. We're very lucky in that sense.
Yeah. So obviously finding out all this information can take a toll on you. Obviously the physical stuff, but obviously from a mental situation as well, point of view, how did that affect you, like individually and then also as a couple as well?
It has really affected me mentally. The first few months were pretty hard for me, because it just did make me question, like I said earlier, the whole reason why I'm here. What is my purpose to be here? I know that sounds quite drastic, but it does make things, put things into a bit of perspective. And you think, well, why do I bother going to work every day? What's the point? Mm-hmm. And it did. I'm feeling better now, but it did hit me quite hard mentally. So I don't want to say how it worked.
Yeah, I think for me, like, it definitely felt like it's almost a grieving process, that you are letting, do you know what I mean? That you are having to kind of let go of this idea that you've always had in your mind. And I think something I've really struggled with is just the highs and the lows. Because every appointment you're waiting like 3 or 4 months. And so you have that appointment, you're feeling really low after it because they're just shut the door on you, and then you have a few months and you're kind of feeling okay about it, and then you have another appointment and it's kind of another low. And I think, yeah, I found that very difficult. Just, and I like to know, I want to know, and waiting, I'm not the most patient person, so yeah. I just want to know like what we can do. But I think for me, like, I felt more like for Tom, and I've really felt for him, because obviously it's not a very nice thing for him to go through, and I didn't want him to ever doubt like me wanting to be here, or, you know, questioning any of that. And I think that's a natural response for anyone to have. But I think we're very lucky that we have like a very strong relationship already. And I think it's made us definitely even stronger, I think. Would you agree, Jenny?
Yeah, definitely.
That's good. I love hearing stories where it makes people stronger instead of going the other way. You know what I mean? It means you really care for each other.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I can see from I can see from experience how it could disrupt a relationship. Mm. When we first found out we weren't married, were we?
No.
And I actually said to Hannah, if you want, we don't have to go ahead with the wedding, because Hannah, you've been kind of like, your life is to have kids, isn't it? And at that point, he's just thinking, well, I'm not going to have to provide Hannah with that, so I'm going to give her a get out of jail free card now.
That's good. It's good. It's like you're each other's like rock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
That's good. That is good. So, am I right in saying like whereabouts in Scotland are you guys? Like roughly, we're
just outside of Glasgow.
Okay. Okay. So, because I've heard that different parts of the UK. Obviously, you're not at the stage yet, but like, say if you have if you do manage to retrieve some sperm, or if you did have to go down the donor route, say down the line, am I right in saying that you'd be able to do it on the NHS, the IVF, or is it one round or is it more rounds than that? Have you looked into that?
We haven't looked into that yet. I think we've both been very much like just trying to take one step at a time and not get too ahead of ourselves. I think something we've struggled with in Scotland more so is that where we live is technically our counties, Ayrshire and Arran. And what they do is different to, say, Glasgow. So, for example, our genetic testing actually happened in Glasgow area. So when we were actually trying to get our results, they work on two different systems and they have two different policies. So one week they're saying, sorry, but we can't show your results. They're on a different system in Glasgow. I can't access them yet. And then another week they're saying something else. So I think geographically, that's something we've struggled with to get ahead of them.
Yeah, that sounds frustrating. Mm. Very frustrating. Obviously, at the stage that you guys are at, Tom, you've told your parents, and Hannah, I'm guessing you've told yours, have you?
And then... Yeah, I have, yeah. And I think that's something that we're very open, like, with our parents about and everything. But I think that adds just another element to it as well. You know, I don't have any, like, direct brothers or sisters, but Tom has two sisters and they don't have children yet. And I think it is that feeling of, like, they have this, in anticipation that it's going to happen, we're getting married. And I think everyone has that, you know, so many people, you know, even at the wedding are saying, oh, so it'll be babies next and all this kind of thing. And that's, you know,
classic.
Yeah, it's very classic, but it's so difficult because you just try and brush it off and everything, but it is very difficult, I think, to hear that. And it's just that little kick in the teeth every single time, you know, somebody says that to you, I think, so.
Yeah. And then obviously you've got I imagine you've got friends on Facebook and everything else. Every time there's a baby announcement, there's a reminder there.
Yeah.
And that's always interesting.
Yeah.
Hannah made a good point there, actually. Just I forgot to mention that the fact that my parents, I could just tell that the news, I think the news affected them as much or more than me and Hannah, I think.
Okay.
I think they were... Sorry, go on.
Because they were looking forward to having grandchildren, is that why?
Yeah. Because I'm the first married out of the kids, you know, and they're so excited about it, and I know they want to have grandkids.
Mm. Yeah, and you're like, you're the only boy in
Yes.
Yeah. So they're obviously put beforehand looking to you to carry on.
Yeah. And they've not applied pressure, but it is a pressure to me. I mean, I felt more of my feelings early. I've not got it. Luckily, I've managed to get over this. Was feeling like I just let everyone down, including my parents and Hannah's mum. But I know it's a silly thing to do because I've not done anything wrong, but it's just a thought that I was going through.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you can't help how you feel, but those thoughts do definitely enter your head because it's such a massive, like, shock. And obviously the expectations that are placed upon us from basically birth.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to it, you're like, oh yeah, we might not be able to have naturally conceived children sort of thing. And it's like, what? And people don't really understand. Like, have you had to really explain it to your families or have you even told any friends yet, maybe?
But funnily enough, I've not really shared it with any of my friends, but the only person I have shared it with outside my family is my line manager at work.
Okay.
Because he's a sort of a friend, but also because I suppose he's a bit of a an outside point of view, and it has affected my work as well. So I had to share it with him what was going on.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that I'm very open about talk. I don't mind talking about things. I have mentioned it a little bit to my friends, and you can tell they're a bit uneasy, and it's not a conversation that they're happy to talk about.
Yeah, it can be a bit. But I think usually with that sort of thing, it's because they haven't experienced it, and obviously they probably have no idea really what it means. Like, they don't understand, like, the mental thought process that you're going through, or just generally the, like, exactly what you probably mean, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It could be easier for them to just be like, yeah, so did you watch football the other night? You know what I mean? Change the subject sort of thing.
Why I wanted to come on to, well, Hannah kind of made me come on to this, but I did want to come talk to you because one of my other feelings I've had is I want to give something back to help other guys out there, like yourself, because I just feel like there's not a lot of support for men in this situation.
I agree. Yeah. And I think the more that we can talk about it and that we have these sorts of things, then the better it can be, you know what I mean? Because obviously everyone's looking for information, which I'm sure you both did, and Hannah as well. I'm sure you were looking maybe on Tom's behalf, and you're looking and you're like, oh, okay, there ain't really a lot out there. I mean, these small nuggets, I don't know how many people have like found the podcast or so on in total, but the amount of people that have seen the podcast is tiny compared to the amount of people that it actually affects.
Yeah, definitely.
But obviously the more people are open about it and actually look out there, then the more people will find these sorts of things. Because I'm sure there's other podcasts out there as well, like specifically on the male side of things anyway. Yeah. We all know there's loads for the ladies. So, I mean, they do go into some parts, and there's a lot of them that do have interviews with blokes as well, which is really good. But I just think it's from a bloke's perspective, sometimes it's easier to relate from listening to a bloke than maybe listening to a woman, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when you've been through it as well. Because if I was doing it and I hadn't been through it, then that'd be a bit weird, but especially not being like an expert either or any sort of medical training. So at the stage that you guys are at now, what's the next step exactly? And what sort of advice do you think you may have for a guy at your stage right now and looking back on it and hearing the results and so on? Give me a few thoughts.
Okay, so the stage we're at right now is we've got an appointment with the urologist next week, and that's going to be discussed whether I would be a suitable candidate for micro-Ts. if I'm not, so then that's the final junction in our eyes, that it, the option is either we go down the micro-T's route or it's going to be adoption or sperm donor. And I think Hannah and I have already, we have had some discussions about if I'm not a candidate for micro-T's, what would you do? Would you go for sperm or adoption? And we don't know yet still. Mm-hmm. We've not put our mind, like Hannah said a minute ago, we are just trying to take one step at a time, I suppose.
Yeah, I can imagine, because I, like, looking at from Hannah's perspective, you've obviously always wanted children. You both obviously wanted children. Mm. And it's kind of like, do you go down the adoption route or do you want to be able to, it depends if you're comfortable going down the donor sperm route, really, ultimately. Because for me anyway, I always, like, my wife's from a big family and all of her sisters and so on have had babies, like at least three kids and so on. And I always wanted her to be able to go through the whole pregnancy journey, if you know what I mean. So what's your thought on that, Tom? Have you thought about that maybe, or is it a bit raw or?
No. So, I mean, we have had conversations and have thought about it. My initial thoughts were that I wanted to go down the adoption route because I felt like that child would be equally attached to both of us.
Okay, yeah.
But then I was thinking on a bit, but then I thought, well, actually, if you go down the sperm donor route, then like you would have said, Hannah will go through the process of being pregnant, and that baby will be part of Hannah. And that sounds a bit cheesy, but Hannah's part of me. So I might feel connected to that child more if it's been growing inside Hannah and it's part of her. So these are the two thoughts I've had.
I know the thought, the exact same thought.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. So obviously, since your whole beginning of your journey up to now, how have your views changed on like fertility and or male infertility, and what thoughts do you have over it, like overall about it?
I suppose my takeaway thought would be that you don't realise how much of an impact it has on people until you're actually there. If you'd asked me a year or 2 years ago about it, I probably wouldn't really thought much of it. But now it's happened to me, I've realised that it is actually life-changing news.
Yeah.
It's life-changing. And I would never have thought that a few years ago. Mm. Would you?
No. I think for me is that I think I've just like through this whole journey, I think it's just really opened my eyes. Kind of, I always say like, what a disservice that we are doing men, that there is just, it's not even a conversation. There's no help. There's no support. There's no kind of clear place to go for a kind of advice. Like, I always joke about it, but there's not even a leaflet about it. And that's something for me that I would take when I would say to anybody is just to push. Don't take no for an answer. You know, that obviously we've been incredibly fortunate that we, you know, that we can go down the private route at kind of points of our journey, but just to push and to keep pushing, because the amount of stories that I've read where you think, actually, have they gone through all these steps? Have they had all these tests done? Have they looked at these other options? Or have they just accepted actually that it's a no and just taken that for granted, I think I would say.
Yeah. I think you could be maybe right there. Yeah. I mean, I found personally that a lot of the time, even when the appointments were about me, they were talking more to the wife than they were to me. Maybe it was like, oh, it's a bloke, you won't really understand sort of thing, or things like that. Or even now, because obviously the wife is up the duff, even now it's like sometimes maybe they haven't read the notes. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm sure it's got to be on there that it says donor conceived IVF. You know what I mean? And that sometimes you walk into the room and they maybe haven't read the notes and they kind of don't really acknowledge you, really. It's like, I know it's obviously it's all about the wife, but at the same time, you kind of need a bit of comforting as well, and like just yeah. explaining things instead of just like, yeah, you sit in the corner over there, we'll just deal with your wife sort of thing. I think, but yeah.
I can empathize with that, definitely.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, even I've looking into donor sperm, is even I found that's not even a topic that is particularly talked about. It's very much focused on women, and is very much focused on that side. And I think that's something I find very difficult, is that, you know, you try and get an understanding of what this might mean for you and what it's going to kind of mean for your children growing up. But again, just trying to find you that information and to get your head around it is such a complex thing, I think, to understand.
Yeah. And sometimes there's a lot of, to be fair, there's a lot about it that they don't explain or so on. But if you really want to understand it, you've got to do a lot of learning by yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
I know that's one thing I've taken away. I've learned loads through this process. And I'd love to try and, in fact, you've kind of inspired me to do this. I want to try and condense my learning into something like an easy format that people can access, in just normal plain language, nothing too complicated. But also, well, actually, that's a good point. Other thing I found is, when you do find information, I find it's pretty too simple. It's too simple. And then the other extreme is you get this information that's written in scientific language. Basically condense my findings into an easy to read or something package.
I mean, I personally, I'm just kind of tell me straight, explain it to me. If I can understand it, then happy days. If not, then I'll ask the wife to explain it to me. Because she's done loads and loads of research about everything, which I imagine the same for you guys. But it's good that, Tom, you're really looking into it as well. I mean, that's kudos to you, man. That's good.
Oh, cheers. It's... I mean, that's one thing you asked me a minute ago, what I would, if I had to give people advice right now, what I would say. I would say you should always push and ask more questions. Do plenty of talking and don't take no for an answer straight away.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom, Hannah, thank you so much for joining me on the MIP. And I hope people keep listening to your journey and your story will be able to feel something and also relate to your story and so on, and hopefully help. That's what I love doing about these interviews, is that everybody's journey is different and you can take little bits from each one and hopefully it can help the person down the line. So just want to say thanks to you guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. It's been good.
Cheers, guys.
So thanks again to Tom and Hannah. That was a lovely, lovely interview. I hope you're finding these interviews helpful and hopefully you can relate to them as well. And if anybody else wants to come onto the podcast as a guest, then please just get in contact with me on my Instagram account, which is @TheMaleInfertilityPodcast. Send me a message and let's try and get things flowing. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks so much for listening. And this is the MIP signing off. See ya.